Hello, Texans. Welcome to the show. Mark Vandermeer and John Harris with you. We've got a lot to get to tonight because, yeah, we've had the draft. We had days of draft talk leading up to and afterwards, and that doesn't mean we're going to put that to bed. But it's been a lot happening around the National Football League that we have to get to, including but not limited to your Texans hard at work as they are in week three of this off-season program. And Johnny, it's nice to see the guys heading out to the practice field. You know, they're working out there. I was riding the elevator up to the press box floor, and I saw that they were done. They were walking back, and it just feels like football practice. We're going to be out there in a few weeks. They can't go full. They can't go against each other yet, but they're doing work on the field. I know the coaches absolutely love this part as well.
Spring practice, baby. That's what I mean. It's a little bit of, I guess it's kind of an extended spring practice. And you won't hit like you can in college, but that's what it is. Draft is over. In a little while, we'll see the rookies end up with the guys out there at practice, OTAs, mini camp, whatever you want to call it. And that'll be fun to kind of see all the pieces out there together. Again, it's a voluntary. The conditioning part is voluntary, and then the mini camps are mandatory. So don't know that they'll have everybody out there during those times, but it'll be good to see the rookies just in the flesh, what they look like up close in person, and then see how they start fitting in, which will be kind of fun. But it just reminds you football is coming.
Oh, yeah.
I guess you could say football never left, I guess. It feels that way a little bit, this building, because we're so used to seeing the guys and seeing the coaches all the time, and then they get into draft mode and then they go hunker down in our offices until it's dark 30 watching film. So you get to see them a little bit more. There's practice and games and things like that. So it's April 30th. It's time to go. Let's go.
Yeah, it's
get
time to
the desert and get through it. And then on the other side, this thing's going to go. The desert's going to go a whole lot faster than we think it might.
It's not really a desert anymore. It's more like a walk across a hot beach, and then you get right to the ocean.
Exactly.
Because the Hall of Fame game is August 1st.
That's right.
They have not released an opening day of training camp yet, but it's got to be around July 17th or so.
Yep.
And with the addition of the Hall of Fame game, you lose a week of the offseason program, but you gain a week of training camp, meaning the coaches gain a week of players have to be here. It's camp. You have to be here, and that's extra work for them. Now, we'll see how they handle it, because that's going to be a big question. How does D'Amico Ryans handle 7 weeks from the time you report to the time that you play the regular season opener? And we'll find out what that opener is next week when the schedule comes out, probably Wednesday, Thursday. You know, we're going to be live on the air heading up to that, talking about whatever leaks. And I'm sure they'll release tidbits of it along the way, like primetime games and stuff like that. You and I are always reacting to the reports and trying to decide whether it's true or false, a leak that we get. In other words, if someone's lying or not. And speaking of which, I've got the Texans radio lie detector ready for segment two.
Oh, right, nice.
Segment two, we're going to get the lie detector out and find out if certain people around the league are telling the truth or not. But we begin with this, and I have an acronym for it. INPO, I-N-P-O, in no particular order.
INPO.
Because these are things that we have not gotten to, that we need to talk about, that fans want to know about, and it's all over the place. So let's start here. 18-game schedule. Say what? Roger Goodell interviewed or gave a press briefing or whatever over the weekend, over the draft, and talked about being headed for an 18-game schedule possibly at some point in the future. Maybe not the very near future, but certainly in the future. I think it's inevitable. Do you think it's inevitable?
Yes. Okay. Absolutely. I think the fact that he's bringing it up makes me think that either he's gotten the message from the owners, we're pushing this, it's time, let's get to 18. These preseason games just aren't doing it for anybody. You know, the glorified scrimmages between the threes and the fours, if you want to go that direction. Let's drop one of these preseason games. Let's pick up an 18th game. And I understand it now that we've gone beyond 16, because for my entire life, it was 16 that I could remember.
Right.
So I was just used to 16. We're all used to 16. When they went to 17, I just remember thinking, oh, okay, it's one more game. But it makes a difference. You feel and sense the difference of one extra game. Now you add another on top of that. If you have two preseason games, then 18, then say three playoff games and a Super Bowl, I mean, that's a lot of football. That is a lot of football. Now, the Texans came up two games short of that, but we could have gone another couple of games.
Yeah.
But when you put the week in between the Super Bowl, it just makes it that that much longer. You got to get caught up on your draft prep and all of that. I understand that I would give all that up. Like, hey, my draft prep can wait if this team is going all the way to the Super Bowl and winning it. But 18 games is long. You feel it. It's tough. But I think it's inevitable. I think he's exactly right. It's inevitable. It's happening. It's just a matter of when. When can they get this done? Is this something that has to be collectively bargained?
It does. It absolutely.
So at what point can they put it in?
Well, they could do it any time that the union and they want to mutually agree to talk right. about it and make an agreement. So they could rip up the current agreement and implement this anytime they want, collectively, right? Yeah, anytime they want.
It's going to be a sticky negotiation because the players are going to want some cash.
Right. Well, then, of course, they'll deserve the cash and right. they'll get the cash.
Right.
Now, the networks also have a big hand in this, of course.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many questions to me. All right, first of all, you'll play the Super Bowl President's Day weekend. He talked about yep. that. Mm-hmm. Most of the country has Monday off, so mm-hmm. you'll play it Sunday, and a lot of people have Monday to recover from the Super Bowl, even though it's been going swimmingly well, doing it the way they've done since the beginning of time. But I get it. This is what you call progress or evolution or whatever. So you'll play 18 games. You'll play the Super Bowl then. That's still with one bye if you refuse to start the season on Labor Day. Now, we'll have the general on Thursday night, and he'll say, they'll never play on Labor Day. The ratings aren't good enough. Now, I think at some point they're headed for Labor Day. They're headed for Labor Day football. Why give college football the whole weekend?
Yeah,
I don't
exactly.
get this. Why allow them to have it? And you've got to play 18 games. I think you need two byes. That's where I'm headed with this. If you opened Labor Day and played 18 games with two byes,
yeah.
you could play the Super Bowl on President's Day weekend, yep. have that week in between because you know they
I'd
want
to be good
the
with that.
Between.
I like yeah. the two byes.
You like the two byes?
I like the two byes.
All right. My next question is this. And they had two byes for at least one season. This is a while ago they had two byes.
Yeah.
And then they backed off of two byes. So if we go to two byes or not, do they need load management in the NFL?
Ooh.
I'm going to say no because here's my thought. Does it really help that much anyway? If you need to sit out a game, sit out a game. I think with 18 games, maybe you're a little bit more apt to, hey, let's sit this guy down. He could probably go if it were a playoff game, but let's sit him down. It's week 7.
Right, right.
What
right.
are we doing here? And that includes your quarterback. Let's just go with the backup quarterback in this particular game because we can. And I know we risk losing. We'll play better with him, but he has something that he needs to get a week to heal. Or he's not going to heal completely, yeah. but he'll be a lot healthier going into the next game. I think there will be a lot more of that. I don't know if you need to purposely say, because this has been floated out there as well. I don't know about the league, but media, whoever, where you would say each player has to sit at least one okay. or 2 weeks. Now, you could do it, and do injuries count? I would say yes, injuries yep. count in sitting a week or two. Would you do that, Johnny? How do you feel about that?
I don't like that. Okay. I'd rather let the teams load manage themselves. They're already kind of doing it as it is. So, I mean, I think back to the Nashville game, or the game against the Titans in Nashville. We're watching Nico Collins work out before the game, and we're like, boy, he looks good.
Yeah, we thought he looked good.
We thought he was going to play, but they held him back one more week. Like, hey, let's give it one more week. And then Nico came back after that and was an absolute monster the rest of the year. So it was like that extra week that the Texans ended up giving that, and you know, maybe he absolutely needed it. But either way, because he got that extra week, he came back a house of fire for the rest of the year. And so I feel like if you had two byes, like say you have week 6 and week 14. So you get 5 games, mm-hmm. then you get a couple weeks before the next stretch. Then you go, I don't know, 7-8 weeks in a row, get another bye, get another chance to rest, and then you get to finish up. I mean, I think I said this at the time that the concussion was the most difficult thing for CJ. Obviously dealing with the concussion and the protocol and all that kind of stuff. But the offshoot of him having to sit because of the concussion was his body got an opportunity to kind of bounce back a little bit.
Right.
He's getting beat up for 2-3 games in a row for sure, if not the whole season. So he got a chance with those couple of weeks that he ended up missing because of the concussion. His body felt better. And that was just kind of the offshoot of that. So I just feel like having a week later in the year in particular, getting that week later in the year would absolutely help. So when they do go to 18, I think the double bye to me is the way to go. But let the teams load manage it. They're already doing it. Mm. They already have to. And, you know, the players have gotten really good about being in tune with their body. I think you would have very few players that would end up playing 18 games anyways.
Yeah, of course.
So I just think you leave. If you all of a sudden mandate, hey, you've got to sit one game. Boy, that gets tough.
That does get tough.
It gets really tough. I mean,
you don't want to do that.
Because you might end up having a team that's really, really good. You got number one seed. Well, they can just sit at the end of the year.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That's a tough one. I just think you let the teams load manage themselves.
I didn't think of that. And that's another good point, though. Are you going to get teams in conferences, if they run away with it? You have that problem now.
Mm-hmm.
The games at the end of the year having less meaning
right.
All right, let's get to this, because we're going in no particular order. I want to get to a TV story. CBS,
ooh.
No Boomer, No Phil. Phil Sims out, Boomer Esiason out from NFL Today. Does anybody watch this anymore? People do, actually. People watch these pregame shows. You should be listening to Texans Radio, but when we're not on, you can pick between Fox, CBS, ESPN, and NFL Network. So you have four big ones right there that you can choose from. But this is the traditional one. This is the NFL Today with Brent Musburger. All right, not anymore. But Boomer's out, Phil is out, J.J. Watt, of course, is there, and they're bringing in Matt Ryan as well. I think Matt Ryan's going to do a pretty good job. I think J.J. does a good job as well, and James Brown drives the whole thing.
I think they just gone with James Brown driving, J.J., Nate, and Matt Ryan. I've been okay with it. I understand bringing back Coach Cower. I get it, but I kind of don't. I wish they would have just gone with those three, because I think those three would have had, I think they would have had engaging discussion with one another.
Yeah.
And their connection to the players is a lot closer than Bill Cowher's. And so I think that's important as well. So it's fine with Cowher. I mean, I'm not losing sleep over, but I think Matt Ryan will be good in studio. Just listening to some of the games that he did, I think he brings something to it. I think JJ's tremendous, of course. And then Nate Burleson is really, really good. I think it's going to be a good fit. It was already kind of too many cooks in the kitchen. That's why I think if you'd have just had James Brown with those three, done.
Nate is a really good broadcaster. I play hoops a couple of times a week at 6 a.m. And when I'm done, CBS this morning is on the locker room, and he's on that show, and you'd never know that he played football. He's just a natural broadcaster at that morning show, general news talk stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, he can do it on the NFL Today. You know, speaking of former Good Morning Football people, why doesn't one of these networks, why don't they snatch up Kay Adams to do pregame, host one of these shows? I don't want to advocate for anybody to lose their gig.
Yeah.
But why not Kay Adams doing one of these shows?
I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know what she's gotten or what she gets in terms of what she does for this FanDuel show. I don't know. Maybe that money is good enough.
Maybe
she
better.
Doesn't want to travel. I don't know. But I think that's a miss.
Yeah.
I think that's a major, major miss. I mean, I love James Brown. Don't get me wrong. And I think CBS institution, James Brown. Like, I love James Brown. I've interviewed him a couple times, and he is the sweetest, most gentle. So he was really, really fun to talk to. So I've always been a fan. But what if you did put Kay Adams with Nate Burleson, J.J. Watt, and Matt Ryan?
Well, she and Nate have natural chemistry for the Good Morning Football show.
Exactly, yeah.
But when he left, they really felt that. Mm-hmm. And then she left, and the whole thing kind of caved in.
So I'm with you. I don't know if it's still this way, but I know Sam Ponder was driving the ESPN show, but I don't know which show that was, because they got like a show before the show. So I don't know which one it was.
It's Countdown.
Yeah, I think she does a really good job leading. She knows football. Mm-hmm. We've talked to her many, many years ago when she was Sam Steele.
There's also that CBS Sports Network show, that other pregame show.
That's what they call it, the other pregame show, which actually that'll pop on. Like when I wake up on the road and I just turn the TV on, just have something going, that'll come on, and I'll watch that more so than I'll watch any of the other shows.
Does NBA Network still have that show with the basketball nerds, the starters, or something?
Think so. I don't think that's there anymore.
That was interesting for a while.
I don't think that's there anymore.
Was such a type.
Yeah.
Basketball nerd.
Niche.
Yes, absolutely. All right, more TV stuff. So you saw a tweet that Fox TV NFL people were having some kind of party.
Yeah, they were at the beach.
They were at the beach, and Tom Brady was there.
Tom Brady was in the back.
So Tom Brady, there are rumors about a comeback. And they're just rumors. But he's the number one Fox guy. He took a year off. He's supposed to be the number one Fox guy this year.
Right.
Kind of rooting for a Brady comeback for one reason and one reason only. Because that he's going to go into the Hall of Fame with Watt.
Right,
and
right.
Oh, I want to be there, and I don't want to be there on Brady weekend.
Yeah,
I just don't.
That's true.
I do not want to be there on Brady weekend, and I don't want anything taking away possibly from Watt. So let's get Brady's clock started again. JJ goes in 4 years. Brady has to wait another year minimum.
Well,
I
Brady
like
screwed this all up by going back another year. If he had just retired
when he was supposed
He was supposed to, then they would have had 1 year separation.
Right.
You would have had Brady, then the next year you would have Watt. It would have been perfect. There's a part of me that just wants to see him go back and try and play football, just to see what that looks
like. Okay, more impressive. This is not more likely to happen. This is more impressive. Brady playing football at 45. Mick Jagger dancing around the stage like James Brown when he's 80. Freaking 80 years old the other night right here at NRG Stadium. 80!
They're both like 9.9.
Yep.
I mean, Mick's not getting chased around by, you know, 300-pound angry men.
But he's getting chased around by Father Time, and he's
but
80.
He's 80. Yeah. He's 80. You showed me a clip from the concert the other night, and it's like, he's 80. Like, I hope that I'm, well, A, I hope I'm alive at 80. B, I hope that I'm walking around at 80, much less dancing like he is on stage. It's incredible. I got to go with Mick at 80. I mean, I think Brady can get back there for a season and just gut it out. I mean, he's got to be protected. And that's one of the things I will say. I thought the Patriots, because there was a mention, Gerard Mayo actually addressed it. And I don't know how, and I think it may have been his presser. He talked about, hey, the door is always open for Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Well, how do you feel if you're Drake May?
Well, I mean, if you're Drake May and Tom Brady walks through the door, you're saying, well, I guess I'm a backup for the time being.
You're Tom Brady. He's Tom Brady. He's going to start.
But
I mean,
you know what, Johnny? The fine line. I don't see it happening.
I bet he can't do it anymore. I just don't. Once you've stepped away from it at that age, it makes it that much more difficult to go back.
And speed.
I mean, I know that sounds obvious, but it's that much more difficult to go back.
Yeah.
And then you're trying to do things that you used to do, and you're like, man, it's not there. And it's not like baseball where you can just go up there and be a crafty lefty and just start throwing off speed stuff, you know, till your arm falls off. No. You got to have some juice.
Or
you
got to
have some zip in that arm.
Or an inning. Brady, we need you for the 2-minute drill.
Right.
It doesn't work that way in football. I could see him playing a game or two or more.
Yeah.
A whole season, 17 games, and
surviving at that point, I start thinking, well, okay, well, what if you came back for the playoffs or near the playoffs? Like, you're going to have one of the quarterbacks lead them there, and then all of a sudden he takes over?
That's,
like, he's the closer? No.
See, that's anti-football
there. That's not exactly.
Teams
that's not football
have
at all.
Issues and debates. There are countless times in the history of this league where a quarterback gets you there, and then somebody else is back. And Brady himself with Bledsoe and that whole thing, and then Bledsoe comes off the bench in the AFC Championship game and wins. And should he start the Super Bowl? Is Brady okay?
Right.
Well, they played that out in the dynasty. What about Earl Morrill and Bob Greasy with the Dolphins in 1972, an undefeated season? Jeff Hostetler and Phil Simms, Tony Eason and Steve Grogan in 85 when the Patriots went to the Super Bowl. Stop me.
I mean, from that standpoint, him sitting at home last year watching Joe Flacco, I wonder what that stirred up in his brain. Like, hey, I know Flacco's younger. Like, I get that. But I wonder just watching, if he's watching Flacco going, man, I could do that. I could totally do that.
I could throw pick sixes.
in the playoffs.
Flacco, here's the thing.
I mean, his last throw as a Patriot was a pick six to Logan Ryan.
The Browns blew out the Texans here in the regular season. Mm-hmm. Flacco threw two picks in that game.
He did.
But he also found Amari Cooper a lot.
He did.
Way too much.
Way too
And much. You're right. Brady might watch that and say, I could still do that. I could still play at least that well. But, yeah, that's on a game-by-game basis. Can you do it for 17 games? And I think that's going to be the question. I'm eager to see how he does in the broadcast booth with Kevin Burkhardt, I presume, at play-by-play and Brady at color.
What does that do with Greg Olsen? Man, I wish they would just let him be a free agent and go find. I mean, because that's just.
He's good.
I mean, he's really good.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to say he's wasted with the number two crew, but he's sort of wasted with the number two crew. He needs to be a number one analyst. I mean, if you ask me, I think he's the big analyst. And we don't know what Brady will be.
Okay.
But of the big analysts.
Ooh, this is big.
I'll listen to Greg Olsen before I'll listen to other.
Really?
Yeah.
You'd take him over Troy Aikman?
Yeah, because with Now, some of it's hard-o football guy because Olsen will give you some – he'll give you some front and run game type stuff that you're just not going to get from the other quarterbacks.
Okay.
You know, that call. I mean, they're just you're going to get some cool stuff, I think, from Olsen. Plus, I think Olsen's funny.
Right.
And he's really quick-witted, and he's on it. I like him. I like Olsen over the others. I just don't think it's – going to happen.
What do we always say about tight ends? They understand the game so well. They have to know the passing game. They have to know the blocking. They have to know everything. And tight ends coaches tend to move up in the world and become offensive coordinators and head coaches. Sean McVay, anyone? So we'll be watching that. Yeah, we all will. Tom Brady's progress as either an announcer or during a comeback. All right, continuing in no particular order, Guardian caps in the news. What are these things? Those are those waffle helmets that they were wearing at training camp last couple of years. They look like soundproofing on your head. We've all seen the images. Johnny and I have seen these things up close. You're allowed to wear them in a game now. Mm. Never were before. No one is actually requested to.
Right.
I'm curious to see if anybody actually does. Now, also, a new helmet is coming out this year, I believe. I might fumble this a bit, but a new helmet is coming out this year that the league says is safer than if you were wearing a Guardian cap with the old helmet.
Hmm.
Old meaning the most other recent helmet, right. I guess. I don't know how you define that because different guys wear different helmets. But they say that this new helmet, I guess that's their effort to kind of squash the Guardian cap being actually worn in a game because it's going to look weird.
Yeah, it'll
look
strange.
Guardian caps look really strange. And Florio wrote about you're going to ruin the vibe. you can't complain about safety and lack of safety and then complain about somebody wearing a Guardian cap. You can't do it.
I mean, you're at least giving the players the option. Well, you know, the players got the option. That's a tough one. I wonder if they'll at some point say, well, you know, you've had a concussion. If you want to come out of concussion protocol, you got to wear it. Here's the thing about helmets. They've gotten, the technology on them has gotten so much better over the years. Yep. However, they're almost like a baseball glove in a sense that there's only one that you like the fit of. You like the fit of this one. Man, this one really fits well.
Can't you get used to another one?
You could get used to it, but it takes a while.
Really?
You really, breaking in a helmet was like the three or four worst days of the year.
Well, what if they, all right, what happens when they go to the Battle Red helmet?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think now the helmets are a little bit more amenable, I guess. I don't know if that's the right word. They're such a better fit now that you probably can wear a different helmet. Now, I would imagine that, you know, as long as you have the right style, like if you want a Shutt helmet versus a Riddell helmet, those two are different. Like Nike and Adidas almost, but they're just a different fit and everything that goes with the helmet. So as long as you're wearing a Riddell helmet, same style, same face mask, all that, it's probably pretty similar. But the technology on these helmets has just changed immensely. I would imagine that's going to continue, but it's up to the players to make sure that they're finding ways to make the game safer for themselves. And if they want to wear the Guardian cap, great. If they want to wear the Q-neck collar like Dalton Schultz wears, great. Whatever you can do to keep yourself safe, because we know, especially if you're going to add another game, 18 games. So I don't like the look of the Guardian cap in a game. I don't love that. But the player wants to go out there. He now has the opportunity and he has the right to wear it. So be it. So be it. Maybe more will follow along. Maybe more won't. But, you know, if a guy's had a concussion, he feels like that's one of the best ways to keep himself safe, then great. I just think that continuing to improve the helmet technology such that players go out there and, look, it's a collision sport. Things are going to happen no matter how safe you are. I mean, think about, you know, car crashes. Cars, the same thing. Cars, the technology for cars is off the charts, but you still have accidents, right? Mm-hmm. You'd like to feel like you're safe, but there's only so much safety that's going to happen when you have those collisions. Same thing in football. So a helmet will only be able to do so much even as they continue to improve the technology. So I don't know. Maybe the Guardian cap adds a little bit.
Yes or no? Will we see someone wearing a Guardian cap in a game this year?
Yes. All right. We will. No, it might be a kicker or a punter or somebody like
Can
that.
Can they make a Guardian helmet where it's not the helmet with the cap on top of it, it's an actual helmet with that foam padding
on the inside?
Well, not on the inside, but instead of the shell, you have a different kind of shell where it's not so 3D. It doesn't protrude as much. You don't look like Gazoo from the Jetsons.
Maybe that's where they're going. Maybe that's where they're going with this. I mean, I would imagine. I mean, the Guardian cap, I don't think was ever meant as use this in a game. I don't think it was ever meant for that. I don't think. Because nobody had ever seen it.
They work to cut down on concussions.
But maybe now the technology changes for those too. Maybe it's now made from a different material that gives you even more protection and it gives you a slimmer fit so you're not looking like Marvin the Martian.
All right, coming up, we're going to get out the Texans Radio polygraph machine to find out who's telling the truth or not around this league. And we will also evaluate, if we have time, the other drafts in the AFC South. Who did the best among the competition? And there's also some NCAA news or thoughts or both. It's Texans Radio. Back at it here on Texans Radio, Mark Vandermeer and John Harris, as we will break out the Texans Radio polygraph machine and find out who's telling the truth or not. I just have three examples here today, Johnny. Are you ready to go?
Okay, let's go.
All right, let's get out the polygraph. First of all, Howie Roseman. We do not draft based on need. Is he telling the truth or not?
I think he's telling the truth. If you look at what the Eagles have done now, obviously, we've always looked at it as you draft the best available player at a position of somewhat of need. I don't think it's always there. But look, they needed to address the secondary. There are sometimes your team just has such a glaring hole that you have to draft for need. But I think they make it a pretty general. I don't think any general manager could step up there and go, we 100% every single time draft the best player available. That just doesn't make any sense.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense.
Because if a quarterback is the best player available and you're loaded at quarterback, you're not going to do it.
Exactly.
Same thing with tackle.
Absolutely. So I think there are times where general managers are going to have to draft for need. It just, they couldn't satisfy whatever needs they had in free agency. A team has always got needs and holes. So from that standpoint, I think he is mostly right about that. Yeah, they're not going to draft for need all the time. There are going to be times when they do. But I think once they feel like they've satisfied as many of the glaring holes, and secondary is a glaring hole for them, I think once they do that, then yeah, I think they definitely draft the best player available. I agree with him on that.
All right, let's get to the next one. Brett Veach, general manager of the Chiefs. By the way, Roseman from the Philadelphia Eagles. General manager of the Chiefs, Travis Kelce is showing no signs of slowing down.
No way. He's slowing down. You don't have, the guy's 33, 34. He's slowing down. But it doesn't appear that way at times because he's so crafty with what he's doing and where he's going.
He knows where to go.
I think he's easier to cover now in man coverage when he runs routes down the field and all those kind of things. I feel like linebackers can run with him now. But he's got such great ball skills that once the ball is thrown in that area, those linebackers have got a tough time because he's so good going and getting it. A lot of his catches now, he goes and just finds an open spot. Hey, run this route. He doesn't run that route. He steps off the line of scrimmage, looks at the coverage, and goes, there's the open area. That's where I'm going. He and Mahomes hook up. He's absolutely lost something. There's no doubt. No player plays as long as he has, which is, I think, 11 years in the NFL. I think it's 11 years. And not slow down a little bit. But his game is not predicated off of that. His game is predicated off of using his mind and then going and reading what's happening and going to an open space and his ball skills. And look, he's still good after the catch, but he's not scary from that perspective all the time. Where he's scary is he's just going to keep moving the chains. He knows where to go on third down. He'll go up and he'll moss a linebacker if you try and put a linebacker on him on a double move. But he's absolutely lost a step. There's no, every player has. But what Kelce has done is he's masked that because of his knowledge of the game and his connection with Mahomes.
All right, I've got another one here for the Texans Radio polygraph machine. Brian Callahan, head coach of the Tennessee Titans. I'm fired up over what I'm seeing out of Treylon Burks. Fired up.
You would have been that fired up, you would have made a trade for Calvin Ridley. I mean, I get that you're You're going to be fired up about your number three big slot receiver? Mm. I mean, because so here's your choice. Burks ends up becoming a player. Well, then you wasted money on Ridley, or you're wasting money on Hop. I mean, I don't get it. Burks had 3 years to do something, 2 years to do something. Well, he was drafted 22. Yeah, because that's when A.J. Brown was traded. He's had 2 years to do something. He's done nothing. He doesn't scare anybody. So if he's going to be their number three, Tyler Boyd, catch 45 to 50 passes, if that's what he's talking about, okay, he might be right. But I don't know how you can get really, really excited about Treylon Burks, especially after spending all that money for Ridley and already having Hop in-house. I don't get it. I'm not buying that.
Okay, those are the three samples for the polygraph that belongs to Texans Radio. I'm going to put the machine away. Now, let's talk a little more draft here, but let's talk about the competition in the AFC South. As the Texans look to win back-to-back for the first time since 2018, 2019, you know they need the division and then some. You need your division, and you need to be able to play at home in the divisional round. But in order to do that, you've got to squash your division opponents. You've got to win these divisional games. They're so crucial. They count twice. All right, let's get to it. Who had the best draft of the three? And I want to give you a few picks here just to mull this over. I know you know, but what about the audience with the Titans? Early on, J.C. Latham, a tackle. Tavondre Sweat, defensive tackle from Texas in round two. Cedric Gray, linebacker from North Carolina. Down the line, a wideout, an edge. All right, that's them. Let's get to the Colts here. Laiatu Latu, the Lombardi winner in round one. Adonai Mitchell, the wide receiver from Texas, round two, three. Matt Goncalves, who Johnny didn't like. I remember that. Tanner Bordellini, the center from Wisconsin in round four. They drafted a receiver, Anthony Gould from Oregon State, and the list went on. Then the Jags, highlighting their draft, round one, Brian Thomas Jr., the receiver from LSU, defensive tackle Mason Smith from LSU in round two, and the third round saw them take Jerry and Jones, a corner from Florida State. And then they took another tackle from Missouri, Javon Foster, Jordan Jefferson tackle, defensive tackle from LSU. And down the line we went, Killian Robinson, the running back from Texas in round five. They had drafted a kicker in round six, Cam Little. All right, so you tell me, Johnny, among the three division foes, who had the best draft, especially in the situation they're currently in?
I think Indianapolis had it with Latu and the two wide receivers, Mitchell and Gould. Mitchell getting him at 52 was a steal. And you don't know all the noise that was going on around Mitchell and whether that pushed him down the board. But I think Mitchell at 52 and Gould at 142. Those three picks, I didn't care for the offensive lineman all that much. Goncalves, hardly at all. But Bordellini, I think, is a decent player. But with Nelson and Kelly and Fries, I think that he's not going to see the field. If he sees the field, he'll be okay. Not great. But I just think those three guys with the Colts, Latu, Mitchell, and Gould, getting Latu at 15, I mean, the first defensive player off the board goes to Indianapolis. I mean, look, sometimes the draft comes down to luck, and the luck kind of played in their favor. I like those picks, like Jalen Simpson, the fifth. I don't really, to be honest, I don't love the Jacksonville draft for Jacksonville. I think Thomas steps in right away to be a number one, but he's not quite ready for that. I mean, I know he's got some vets around him, but I don't think they're going to have it's going to take him a little while. And after that, Mason Smith's a huge wild card, figuratively and literally. I did love Jerry Jones, like him. Foster, I think Jefferson was a better pick than Foster was. And then the rest of it's just kind of, you know, okay. So I don't know that Jacks will help themselves. The two picks up front for the Titans gave you the impression that their Titans bully ball is not completely gone, because they go with Latham, who's massive, and Tavondre Sweat, who's bigger than he is. So they went big and physical, and I don't know how that's all going to play, to be honest. I don't know if Brian Callahan wants to pick up the pace a little bit. We'll see. But if Tavondre Sweat's in his right mindset, right body frame, playing next to Simmons, that could be tough. But I think the Colts getting Latu to two receivers, that was the biggest part of this draft from the AFC South.
Jacksonville lets go of Zay Jones, right? So at receiver, Gabe Davis, Brian Thomas, Christian Kirk would be your 1, 2, 3, not in that order, but they would be your three starting receivers here. Now, good for them. They have tight end Evan Engram still in the fold, but that does not impress me as a receiving crew.
Right.
It could be pretty good.
Yeah.
If you're running the ball well, they could be really good. They still have ETN.
They got
the
a bunch of 1.5s is what they have.
Is that what it is?
That's the way I look at it. I don't think they got a bunch of number ones. Now, they might see Brian Thomas Jr. as that, but he's not right now. I mean, he's a rookie. He's a rookie. He's a deep ball guy. I mean, he's gonna take the top off, or they're going to throw him screens, and he's going to try and catch and run. He's not a complete route tree guy right now. I mean, he's not doing all the routes in the route tree to get him interior routes, getting himself open there. I mean, he's big, physical, fast, and they're going to throw him the football. He's going to catch 40 passes for 680 yards and 5 touchdowns. I mean, that's what he's going to do. He's going to create some big plays, but he's not a complete. They just have a bunch of 1.5s. Kirk would be the number one, but he's a slot guy, so I don't know if you can say that. And Gabe Davis, I know they paid him money, but he's not a number one. They're all just kind of 1.5s, which is good for number two and three, but you got to have at least a guy you look at as being a number one. You could look at the Texans and go, on any given day, any one of those three guys can be a legit number one receiver.
My question about them, well, one of many, is did they do enough to improve their defense? You know, they weren't that great last year statistically. Points,
right,
midway through, like middle of the pack. Yards, bottom third of the league. You know, you look at what the Jaguars have right now, it's not impressive compared to the performance that they had last year. They didn't make additions that would make you say, wow, all right, they're headed in the right direction here. A lot of the names, you know, Trayvon Walker and Roy Robertson-Harris along the line and Devin Lloyd at linebacker. Josh Allen, obviously, great yep. pass rusher. But where did it get them, Johnny? It got them those numbers that I just gave you, and did they do enough to change it? I know they drafted the players you mentioned, but none of those guys are going to start in all likelihood.
Well, the secondary, too. What have they done in the secondary?
Yeah, they lost some guys,
yeah,
and now they got, you know, they got Campbell and Cisco.
They brought in Darnell Savage.
Savage to play the nickel.
The Packers were very happy to see him go.
Ronald Darby.
I mean, Darby was a good pickup. That is more than underrated pickups, but I still, does that secondary scare you? No. I don't, that secondary doesn't scare me, in large part because last year, now, what does change is they brought in Ryan Nielsen from the Atlanta Falcons as defense coordinator. He's good. He's good. He'll show some different looks. He had our guys confused when we played him in Atlanta. So I got a feeling he'll change some things up, but I still don't look at that defense and go, well, the draft made it better. I mean, Mason Smith's a total project. Jordan Jefferson, even as much as I like him, he's a fourth rounder. Prince, a fifth rounder. So it's not as if they really improved the defense all that much, but I do think, and we've seen it here, same personnel or similar personnel, bring in a different defensive coordinator, and, whoa, okay, it looks a little bit different. It looks a little bit better. Players kind of fit their roles a little bit more. So I'm curious how the Nielsen effect impacts the defense, but as far as just player personnel, Savage doesn't scare me at all in the secondary. Cisco is a hitter, but I'm glad he's back there. And Campbell didn't have a great year last year. I thought he was on the verge of being that guy. He wasn't. But Darby's a good pickup for them. But still, what Nielsen will do for them, I think, will keep that secondary from busting as much as it did against us. They busted a number of times, and we took advantage of them on the two deep balls to Tank.
You know, as I say what I said about the Jags, if you think about what the Texans did, statistically better than the Jaguars defensively, and what did Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans do? They went out and changed the whole defense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yep.
You know, some of the guys that you know, obviously, they're still here, but they added to it in a big, big way and in an exciting way.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have a defense that's a whole lot better than last year and move comfortably into the top 10 in yards and points and DVOA, whatever you want to call it. Well, you want to call it that because that's what it is, right? That's exactly what it is.
It's exactly what it is.
You don't do whatever you want to call it with analytics.
Right.
My gosh. But they were 11th in points per game allowed, which was their best number in years.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully trending in a better direction in 2024.
Yeah, I think so. I think that you make a great point just about the personnel changes. And the Colts scare me more than the Jaguars do. They just do. And now adding a lot to those two wide receivers, especially because I think those two wide receivers with Steichen, with the three they already have, you know, one of them's going to get injured, one of them's going to be non-productive, but they're going to have two or three guys that are fairly productive for Anthony Richardson, you'd think. And then it's just up to whether, and then Richardson's the total wild card. What does he have for 2024 and beyond?
Well, the Colts have the best running back in the division.
They have that.
They do not have the best quarterback in the division, but it's a wild card position right now because we don't know how good Anthony Richardson's going to be.
He could be nipping at CJ's heels. He could be clearly fourth.
I mean, the Colts clearly have a defense that can give you a lot of problems, but they weren't setting the world on fire as a whole in 2023.
That secondary was hot garbage last year.
Right. I mean, look at that. They were bottom six in the league in points per game allowed.
Yep.
So, you know, offense has something to do with that with turnovers. But this is a team that still won 9 games doing that.
Yep.
So they probably feel like, let's get a little bit better, and it's going to be a lot better record-wise, yep. or a game or two could mean the world to them. All right. That's it for that segment. Coming up, we'll clean up some NFL stuff and college sports getting more professional every day. What do we mean? We'll find out next on Texans All Access. Final walk around the block here tonight on Texans Radio. That's another way of saying final segment, but I'm looking for creative ways to sub in for that. All right, Johnny, college sports. I hate to even bring it up, my gosh, but it does apply because NFL affected by it. Right?
Definitely. Felt the draft.
For the first time, I don't know if it's the first time, but not wanting to sign the NFLPA deal, right?
Yeah. Marvin Harrison.
We had that, Marvin Harrison Jr. And it's definitely playing a part. Nick Caserio has talked about this, but the NCAA in a class action suit, and there's thought that it might happen where they agree to revenue sharing, right? And I've been saying this for a long time. I believe the athletes need to be compensated somehow in these revenue-generating sports. Now, if your sport doesn't make any money, I don't know how you can make the case that you should be compensated by the university in any other way than the scholarship and the ability to make money on the side with name, image, likeness,
right.
otherwise known as NIL,
yep.
in today's world. But if you are in a sport that generates big dollars, any kind of dollars, you should be able to share in the pool of money that sport generates. Now, there are those in athletic administration who say, yeah, once the expenses are paid, but you guys jack up the expenses, maybe.
Right.
That would be the accusation on the other side. But somehow you got to come to an agreement here. And I don't know if it's fair or legal with Title IX, Johnny.
That's exactly right.
If you're women's lacrosse and you get a couple of hundred people coming to the game, do they pay $5 a piece? I don't know. Do you deserve part of that pool? Is that all you're going to get?
Right.
Other than what you can get on the side in an NIL deal? I don't know the answers to those questions, but I can tell you this. I do know one thing. If I'm playing football at a high level for an SEC-type school, yeah, I should get a share of the pie. I'm not saying a ton of it, but I should get some of that in addition to my NIL capabilities.
Football is the one that always creates issues. I had this argument even before, like, this was back when I was in college. And yeah, you obviously know I went to Brown, so I was around some very intelligent people, some very strong-willed people. And we would get to talking about Title IX and certain situations, and I was like, football skews everything. There's no sport that has the same. You can't find another sport on the other side. You're having to lose. At that time, there were men's sports that were getting kicked to the curb because football had so many more opportunities.
Yeah.
You had to balance them out on each side. And it was like, that's just not fair. That's not fair that because of football, the sport being what it is, all of a sudden. No, it's not fair that those male sports end up going down. The original premise of Title IX all those many years ago was if you had a male sport that had a female sport equivalent, like men's basketball, you have women's basketball. Mm-hmm. If you can carry one, you had to carry the other. Well, there was no equivalent to football all as many years ago. Now, Title IX has evolved throughout the years.
There's women's crew.
Right.
At some schools.
So there are so many, and I know Paige is listening. Paige is like, heck yeah. She rode for the Savannah College of Art and Design crew so many, many years ago. So we would have this conversation, and it just was like, football is such an outlier. Football's become even more of an outlier. Because of the money that it's making, it's separated itself so much more from all seemingly of the other sports. So I don't know if there's a way where you say football excluded or football has to do its own thing and break away from the NCAA so that Title IX potentially is not.
Does it, though?
But I don't know if you can do that.
Does it work that way?
I don't know if you can do
because
that.
Because, you know, look, you spent a lot of time with Casey Killer, right?
Right.
What is he going to say about all this, about compensating players? I don't get enough money coming back to cover my budget, or
that's
I
right.
barely do it. Whatever the
right.
number is, he's barely covering his expenses. Mm-hmm. It's not like they're bathing in cash at
right.
Sam Houston State, even though they've played at a very high level in FCS,
right.
and now they're giving it a go in FBS.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's always going to be an issue for probably all but about probably 50, 60 schools in college football. And that's why I think it's going to break away. There's going to be, and I don't know how they're going to do it, but I know they're discussing it. I saw something the other day that showed there was an 8-conference, 80-team kind of Premier League sort of concept where they're going to break away. They're going to have these 8 conferences. They're going to be geographically aligned, and that's what they're going with. And
I want to see the names. I want to see 81. I want to see which school is
81. Who doesn't get in, yeah.
Because I want to see if that school is really that much less
right.
in terms of what they have program-wise, revenue-generating power-wise than 80. But I like that idea, actually. I think it has to go to that.
I think it has to go to that. And I don't know how. And I remember reading about that, and I remember one sentence that said, I don't know how. I'm the same way. I don't know how this is impacted by Title IX or how Title IX impacts it or how it impacts Title IX. I don't know. But I do know it's going to be a factor in whatever happens along those lines. So college sports, the last probably 5 to 7 years has been as chaotic as anything that I've ever seen between conference realignment, NIL, transfer portal. It's been unbelievably different than what it is. And who can expect where it's going? Who can anticipate where it's going? You just know there's money in, especially in the football aspect of it. It's just a matter of, are those schools and those football programs going to say, look, why are we spreading this money around? This should be for us. Like, the money is because of us.
Yeah.
Why doesn't it stay
They've
with us and the players,
years.
Too?
They've said it for years.
Absolutely.
It doesn't always work that way.
It doesn't.
I think
it doesn't.
Another fascinating thing is women's basketball, because the top programs do earn money.
Yes.
But many don't.
Right.
But I'm eager to see where it all goes, because I think they're really onto something here. And how about the story of Tillman Fertitta evaluating whether to have the Comets return?
I think it would be fantastic. I think the
WNBA never should have left.
WNBA is getting to a good spot, really in a good spot. Comets come back. I think they would have a lot of support here in Houston. Absolutely.
Less selling
Bring them
though.
Back.
If you own the Comets and you don't own the Rockets or control of the building, you got a big problem.
Yeah, yeah,
you
huge
have
problem.
To have that.
Yes.
That association.
Absolutely.
It makes it work economically. All right, that's it for the show tonight. We kind of went off the rails with a sports business topic, but it's fun. And tomorrow night, we've got in the lab a bunch of other fun stuff. John McClain will join us Thursday. Got Fred Weary and Indy Kalu coming up this week with Texans OGs. That should be up on the website soon enough, if not already. Have a great night. Area 45 is next. Go Texans.